In fact, it was formed just a few months after our association, which was then the Ukrainian Labor Farmer Temple Association, was banned by the government of the Liberal government of Mackenzie King. And it was banned. I'm not exactly sure the reasoning, but I believe it was banned because this was the time of the war had started with the German invasion of Poland, but the Soviet Union was not involved in the war because of the non-aggression pact between those two countries. So when the war started with the invasion of Poland, the Canadian government banned several organizations, Nazi and fascist organizations, and our organization, even though our organization did not at all repudiate Canada's involvement in the war. Despite the Soviet Union not being involved in the war, we supported Canada's involvement in the war at that time before the Soviet Union became involved. So it was really an outrageous miscarriage of justice just because we were somehow, in the eyes of the Canadian state, affiliated to the Soviet Union. Our association was banned, even though the Canadian state was not at war with the Soviet Union, though it was at war with Germany, of course. So it was really an outrageous violation, and our halls were seized. We had several dozen halls across Canada. All of our contents were destroyed. Our libraries were burned. Here in Edmonton, in our old hall, our library was li literally thrown in the incinerator. So it's really amazing that, and many of these halls were transferred at about a tenth of their value to the Ukrainian right wing, which formed the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. So the Canadian state directly intervened in the Ukrainian Canadian Committee. They banned the progressive wing, the organized progressive wing of the Ukrainian Canadian Committee, and the Canadian state itself formed the reactionary wing, the right wing, which is now the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. It wasn't even founded by Ukrainians. It was founded by the Canadian state. It was and the British state. It was founded by an individual, Watson Kirkconnell, a very interesting individual, and then a couple of others. I can't remember their names. So it was almost an official Canadian state creation. And exactly as Glenn says, that kind of difference between those two organized wings of the Ukrainian Canadian community, one state, one connected to the state, and one oppressed by the state, at least back then, has continued on, up to this day. So I don't know if our association in the past several years has commented on this 1940 banning. We have a book published on it, which was published, I can't remember when, in the 70s or 80s. And we have not made much comments on that. I don't even know exactly what happened as a result of that. Some of our properties were returned, I believe, but the Canadian state has never recognized its injustice in this case, nor the Liberal Party, as they have recognized their injustice of interning Japanese individuals. But of course, the Japanese were interned en masse. Only the leaders of our association were interned in World War II. So, but I think we must take this opportunity to demand this kind of apology from the Canadian state and recognition of its gross miscarriage of justice.
Yeah, well, the Canadian government is not eager to apparently have this record of what happened with Yaroslav Honka in the parliament on the 22nd appear in the annals of history. In fact, Carina Gould, the House of Commons leader on the government side, she made a motion to actually strike the proceedings from the record. Did you see that, Glenn?
No, I did not. I had heard that that was being thought of and was being maybe proposed, but I did not know that that was actually made a motion to that.
It was. There was a motion made, believe it or not, and it required unanimity, which it didn't get. I didn't see who shouted it down from the other side, but I could hear their voices. They weren't many, but they were strong. And so that didn't go through. But if you go to the Hansard, as I did, to try to find the proceedings, you won't find that date existent at all. I called the office of Hansard, the parliamentary librarian, to ask why it wasn't appearing. And apparently, I was told that there was apparently another motion, one that I didn't see, to have those records moved to the previous day's sitting as an appendix, which they, some of them at least, were. And I was told that they, there was no session on that date. So what had happened there wasn't termed by them an actual session, but in a sort of an Orwellian way, it was a, an event that didn't happen even as it was happening.
And moving it to the previous day really will obscure it in the future as future historians try and delve into this.
Yeah, well, what's your take on that, Alex, of the memory holing or the attempts of the government of Canada to memory hole this whole event?
Yeah, it's really outrageous. I saw when that happened, House Leader Carina Gould tried to make a motion to strike the recognition of Hanka off the record. And to the credit, I think it was the Conservatives, they opposed that, maybe the NDP as well. But it brings up 2 points to me. You know, it's an outrageous attempt at censorship. And then throughout this whole thing, Ms. Gould has referred to her being the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors in this whole affair. I don't know if she's, I believe she's Jewish. So it's really an outrageous, that a Jewish woman, a granddaughter of Holocaust survivors, would try to sweep this under the rug. You know, it's really incredible almost. And then the other thing is, I would say that we can't give credit to any of the other parties in the House of Commons, because they all stood up and applauded this Nazi. So they all have to take responsibility for it. But I would, circling back to Carina Gould, I would say, I would forgot one point. The point about President Zelensky, which Glenn discussed earlier, I mean, it's often commented, how could a Jewish president of Ukraine, and I believe his grandfather or maybe both of his grandfathers fought for the Soviet Army in the Second World War, you know, how could such a person condone or accept these kind of Nazi elements in present Ukraine or in past Ukraine? Well, we can see it here, a smaller example in the case of the Liberal House Leader, where people can be descendants of Holocaust survivors and still try to sweep this celebration of a Nazi under the rug. Maybe in her mind, because it was so outrageous or so embarrassing, but the effect is that it hides that embarrassment. And that embarrassment can't be hidden and swept away. It has to be exposed, and we have to go further and further developing this criticism throughout all these links with these Nazi elements in Canadian society.
Well, and I'll quote Carina Gould, the Honorable Carina Gould, leader of the government in the House. She says, quote, I'm a parliamentarian, a Canadian of Jewish origin and a descendant of Holocaust survivors. A majority of my family walked into Auschwitz-Birkenau, and only my grandfather and his brother walked out. I think this hurt all of us in Parliament. Personally, I feel particularly hurt by this. I don't want to downplay the Holocaust by any means, but to be particularly hurt is to negate the fact that millions and millions of people that weren't Jewish survivors or the families of Jews also were killed by the SS in Ukraine and other places as well. Almost 50,000 Canadian soldiers were killed trying to stop that juggernaut that Carina seems more intent right now on protecting from embarrassment the government of the day than really expressing the kind of outrage that this represents, and that Zelensky, by extension, as an agent of the inheritors of that philosophy, represents.
Exactly. I mean, from my perspective, there's only one real way to deal with this, and that is to, as Alex says, Parliament must develop its apology on this question and extend it further, and to extend it and deepen it into really rooting this out, this support for fascism and Nazism that has existed within the Canadian context. And that's the only way that the Canadian Parliament can redeem itself. The government can redeem itself. And as part of redeeming the standing of Canadians, because ordinary Canadians oppose this, unfortunately, we're tarred with the brush of what these parliamentarians have done.
What do you know, Alex, about the mechanism that allowed these thousands of war criminals entrance into Canada after the Second War?
Well, I'm only kind of learning myself on this. You know, as I said, I was in Winnipeg recently, and I was looking through our AUNC archives there, and our English language newspaper at the time, the Ukrainian Canadian, really delved into this. There's many, many articles from, it started in 1947, and I've just run up to 1950, many articles on these DPs, the displaced persons they were called. So these were referred specifically mainly to Ukrainian immigrants or refugees, displaced persons who came to Canada after the Second World War. You know, some of them, they were in camps in Germany, Austria, Italy, I think. Some of them had been brought to those territories in Germany as slave laborers. So the Nazi collaborationists among the Ukrainians, one of their major roles during the Second World War was not just to recruit Ukrainians into this Waffen-SS division, 14th Waffen-SS division, but another one of their major roles was to recruit slave laborers, Ukrainian slave laborers, to work in Germany, you know, building armaments and all kinds of things during the Second World War. So after the Second World War, there were many Ukrainians in Nazi Germany and Italy and Austria. Some of these were slave laborers, as I said. Many of them were Nazi collaborators and outright Nazis, SS division men. So they were, I believe, the 14th Waffen-SS division was then kind of brought to Britain as en masse almost, I think. And then Britain for a while was wondering, what can we do with these people? This is a very kind of uncomfortable situation to have all these Ukrainian Nazis in Britain. So somehow, I don't know the details, they managed to put these people, to send these people to Canada, and Canada accepted them. And the role that they played in Canada was often in the early Cold War era. It was a role of vandalism and even terrorism against our association, the organized Ukrainian Canadian left. But also, maybe more importantly, their role was as strike breakers, and they were used against the militant unions of the day, you know, in throughout Canada, in Northern Ontario and in Western Canada, I believe. They were given jobs in mining companies and other forestry, and they were used to break the militant unions which had been built up in the 30s and 40s in Canada. So there's no doubt that that's why they were brought here, and that's how they were used by the Canadian state and by big corporations in Canada. I don't know if that's how they were intended to be used when they were brought here, but that's how they were used, certainly.
Well, and John Helmer at Dances with Bears writes about some of those displaced persons after the war, the Ukrainians that had fled west and ended up in British camps. Some amongst the Waffen-SS were Ukrainians that were the ones you described that had been recruited into slave labor, and there was a mix of people that must have been something to behold, where both sides of that divide were they found themselves bunking together. We're fast running out of time, Glenn, but before we go, I know that I want to mention in the House, the Prime Minister, in address before Zelensky gave his address, Prime Minister Trudeau, he said, I have made it clear that our government will stand by your side as long as it takes. Canada has provided close to $9 billion in military, financial, and humanitarian support since Putin started his war of aggression. Today, we are making a longer-term, multi-year commitment that provides predictable, steady support to Ukraine. It will include $650 million over 3 years for 50 armored vehicles, including medical evac vehicles, that will be built by Canadian workers in London, Ontario. We will also send F-16 trainers for pilots and for maintenance, so Ukrainians are able to maximize their use of donated fighter jets. Well, so there you have it, Glenn, that the government is determined on a war footing for years to come. I think 3 years will exceed Mr. Trudeau's term. I think many people hope it will. I mentioned your involvement, Glenn, in the Winnipeg or the Peace Alliance Winnipeg. What's your reaction to, firstly, the Canadian determination, the Canadian government's determination to follow a course of war for at least 3 more years in this instance and in other places too, presumably? And before we go, I want to talk a little bit about something that you're involved in your organization, the Global Week of Action. Glenn.
Yes. So important point about the AUUC is that we said this war could be averted before in January 2022, we issued a statement saying the war could be averted, that the necessity was for diplomacy and negotiations, implementation of the Minsk agreements. That's what we said. And after the war broke out, we said that the urgent need was to stop this war, to enter into a ceasefire and leading to negotiations. In fact, some of that happened, but as we know that in April 2022, a peace agreement was quashed. A peace agreement signed by Ukrainian and Russian negotiators was quashed when Boris Johnson made his visit to Zelensky. So the fact that the Canadian government has been on this course both before and after the start of the war, the more we're talking about now is with the Russian invasion of February 2022, because there was war there before. But Canada has been continuously promoting escalation, and this is just a further continuous. I don't know what will be left in Ukraine if it lasts 3 more years, this war. There are all kinds of commentators on both the right and left who are analyzing this war on almost a daily basis, and all their predictions for Ukraine are dire, that Ukraine will not emerge out of this war as the state it was before. So in that context, of course, the peace. Anyone speaking for peace has been silenced in Parliament, in the media, and outside of Parliament and the media in terms of meetings have been about peace in Ukraine, have been deplatformed by members of the Ukrainian community who have pushed this war. But nonetheless, the peace movement has pursued its opposition to the war. And right now we're in the midst of an international week of actions called Global Days of Actions to end the war in Ukraine. And in Canada, the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network is organizing demonstrations October 1st to 8th under the banner Peace Now, Stop the War, Stop NATO, and demands to fund peace, not war, Canada out of NATO, negotiations, not escalation, water bombers, not fighter jets, speaking to the social needs that all this spending on war detracts from. And yes to climate justice and peace, no to NATO. So those are the demands of the Canadian peace movement. And there have been actions organized. I just saw the event, an action in Toronto, had some 100 people on its event. We had an action here in Winnipeg, which was successful, small but successful. So Canadians are losing fast their interest in this war or their support for this war. Polls aren't done regularly about it, probably because it would show how much this is changing. But about a year ago, it showed there was significant shift in Canadian support for this war. So one can only hope that the Canadian government or the MPs will begin to see begin to speak in a more sane and rational way and find that Canada should work for negotiations and an end to the war.
And the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, they advertised that this Saturday coming October 7th, 2 p.m. at the Federal Building at 55 Bay Street North in Hamilton, they will rally they have done a lot, not only to stop this war, but they've been very busy the last 20 some odd years. And that's a part of the Canada-wide Peace and Justice Network effort. And that in turn is a part of the worldwide global week of action, that it's not only Canadians that are tired of this. We're fast running out of time, but Alex, before we go, I'll just say that Canada was once known as a country described as a country of two solitudes. You could say the same, I imagine, for the Ukrainian diaspora in this country, and I expect in other countries as well, and within what was recognized as Ukraine until very recently. What's your reaction to the Alex, to the continuation of the war as expressed, the optimism for the continuation of the war as expressed by Prime Minister Trudeau, given the backdrop of, as some estimate, 500,000 Ukrainian deaths so far because of this fighting with Russia?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. Every nation is divided into classes and other divisions, into left and right. So we can't speak of one spokesman for an entire nation on any of these issues. And for Ukraine as a whole, this war has been a terrible disaster. It's been terrible for the people of Russia, I believe, too. It's been terrible for the people of Europe. It's been terrible for Canadians. You know, the high cost of living, the inflation is caused by military spending in this war. So we all need to come together. All people who oppose this war, who support peace, including Ukrainians and Ukrainian Canadians, this war is being fought. It's a terrible war between Russia and Ukraine, and it's being fought. I think some U.S. politicians have explicitly said, this war is being fought to the last Ukrainian against Russia. They're fighting NATO, U.S. imperialism. Canada is supporting this war in order to use Ukrainians against Russia. That's the bottom line. And it hasn't gone well for Ukraine, especially the Ukrainian people, and it's not going to go well, you know, no matter how long it lasts. So we really have to oppose this war. Just a quick shout out to here in Edmonton, if any of your listeners are here, this Saturday, 2 PM at noon, the Edmonton Peace Council will hold a demonstration at the Old Strathcona Farmers Market in support of this Canada-wide and worldwide peace demonstration against this war in Ukraine. So yes, thank you. And I hope everybody can get out and support peace against this war.
Well, that's Alex Boykovich, Edmonton branch of the Association of United Ukrainian Canadians. Alex is the president and president of both the Peace Alliance Winnipeg and Association of United Ukrainian Canadians in Winnipeg is Glenn Michalczuk. Thank you both for coming on and talking a little bit about this with me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks, Glenn.
Well, peace out. And that's all I've got until the next time.
Back when Eisenhower was the president, golf courses is where most of his time was spent. So I never really listened to what the president said, because in general, I believed that the general was politically dead. But he always seemed to know when the muscles were about to be flexed. Because I remember him saying something, mumbling something about a military-industrial complex. Americans no longer fight to keep their shores safe, just to keep the jobs going in the arms-making workplace. And then they pretend to be gripped by some sort of political reflex. But all they're doing is paying dues to the military-industrial complex. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary. The military and the monetary get together whenever they think it's necessary. They turn our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. The military and the monetary use the media as intermediaries. They are determined to keep the citizens secondary. They make so many decisions that are arbitrary. We're marching behind the commander-in-chief, who was standing under a spotlight shaking like a leaf. But the ship of state had landed on an economic reef, so we knew he was going to bring us messages of grief. The military and the monetary were shielded by January and went storming into February. Brought us pot-bellied generals as luminaries. 2 weeks ago, I hadn't heard of the sumbitch. Now, all of a sudden, he's legendary. They took the honor from the honorary. They took the dignity from the dignitaries. They took the secrets from the secretary, but they left the bitch an obituary. The military and the monetary from thousands of miles away in a Saudi Arabian sanctuary had us all scrambling for our dictionaries because we couldn't understand the fucking vocabulary. Yeah, there were some smart bombs, but there were some dumb ones as well. Scared the hell out of CNN in that Baghdad hotel. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. War in the desert sometimes sure is scary, but they beamed out the war to all their subsidiaries. Tried to make so damn insane a worthy adversary, keeping the citizens secondary, scaring old folks into coronaries. The military and the monetary from thousands of miles in the Saudi Arabian sanctuary kept us all wondering if all of this was really truly necessary. We've got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. If we only worked for peace, if everyone believed in peace the way they say they do, we'd have peace. The only thing wrong with peace is that you can't make no money from it. The military and the monetary, they get together whenever they think it's necessary. They've turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet into a cemetery. Got to work for peace. Peace ain't coming this way. We should not allow ourselves to be misled by talk of entering a time of peace. Peace is not the absence of war. It is the absence of the rumors of war and the threats of war and the preparation for war. Peace is not the absence of war. It is a time when we will all bring ourselves closer to each other, closer to building a structure that is unique within ourselves, because we have finally come to peace within ourselves. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning parts of the planet into a cemetery. What you gonna do? Military and the monetary. Military and the monetary. What you gonna do? We hounded the Ayatollah religiously, bombed Libya and killed Gaddafi's son hideously. We turned our back on our allies, the Panamanians, and saw Ali North selling guns to the Iranians. Watched Gorbachev slaughtering Lithuanians. We better warn the armies, they may bomb the Pennsylvanians. Military and the monetary. Get together whenever they think it's necessary. They have turned our brothers and sisters into mercenaries. They are turning the planet to a cemetery. They got folks out there working for war. 1, 2, 3, 4. Make a whole lot of money, start a little trouble, it's war. Turn this planet in the north and south, it's war. Start a few rumors over there, make money with a war. Peace. Say it to yourself. I believe we got the word for peace. Peace ain't gonna be free. I got the word for peace. But it's a matter of fact that there are thousands of children all over the world, in Asia and Africa and in South America, who need our help. When they start talking about 55 cents a day and 70 cents a day, I know a lot of folks feel as though that's not really any kind of contribution to make, but we have to give up a dollar and a half just to get in the subway nowadays. This is a song about tomorrow and about how tomorrow can be better if we all, each one reach one, each one try to teach one. Nobody can do everything, but everybody can do something. Everyone must play a part. Everyone's got to go to work. Work for peace.